Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life on an overcast day. It's the 4th of August. It's Monday, the 4th of August. And yesterday I said it was a bank holiday today, but actually I may have made a mistake. It's a summer bank holiday in, it's got here brackets, S and ROI. Is that the Republic of Ireland? So, yeah, not over here. I only caught, it just said summer bank holiday, and I thought, ah, right, fair enough. But I was corrected, which is good. Not that it makes any difference to me. I'm not heading down the bank today. At least, you know, banks can have these holidays, and everybody else has a holiday, don't they? Seems to have, I mean, the days just pass here, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's a Monday or a Sunday. Anyway, I've made myself a cup of coffee and I'm sitting on my sofa ready to chat to you, the gentle listener. So listen up. There's your early morning slurp. Yesterday I put out two videos. One was the smoking video, the pipe smoking video, of course. Somebody, some wag, I was talking about my books that Biggleswick is nearly done, and I'm writing this. Well, I've had to pause for a moment because we're trying to get the proofreading done for the Biggleswick book, but I had been writing this one about pipe smoking. And some wag in the comments said, Mr. Vobes, why don't you write a book about how to fleece money from people on YouTube? Which I thought was a bit below the belt, but I ignore these people. Thick-skinned, you see, been doing it too long. Any YouTuber who's been doing it too long knows that you attract all these nutcases who have nothing better in their life to do than to write silly comments. And they don't. The thing is, they don't even know that they are these silly people writing silly comments. That's how deranged they are. But anyway, there you are. So I've been ignoring that. Yesterday was a humid day, and the sun did sort of come out from time to time. Julia and I were walking. We thought we'd just take some time out. Went off in the van and were walking through woodland and on, you know, footpaths and things. Just nice to have a bit of a change of scenery from the house and looking after kids. She didn't have to look after the kids yesterday, so that was very nice. And in our walk, you know, we often do these sort of things. We used to do a lot of that sort of stuff in the old days, of course, walking the countryside and filming. But we should have filmed something, really. But we're just having a bit of time out because we had things to talk about, things to discuss, things about the land to talk about, what we're going to do and all of this when we get some land and what we might grow. We were thinking we've got to work out what the growing seasons are. You know, one of the things that we were sort of saying, well, if we got land in the next couple of months and it all went through and everything, then how quickly could we get something in the ground? And what would it be? Would it be the winter crops? Let's say you sort it out with the solicitors and that all takes, and land registry and all that business, and you cough up the money and all of that. And then what? Well, it could be September, October. Is it a sensible time to plant then? Or if we've got to wait till the spring? These are things that in the past I've sort of read about, but I can't remember. And I do remember reading there was a chap called Trusset? Is his name Trusset? Who was writing in the Middle Ages. And he writes in rhyming couplets. But a lot of gardeners quote him. And he says, you know, the times to do and the things to work out. But, you know, it's a bit in old English. But everybody seems to quote him. I haven't seen him being quoted recently in what books, because we've been not so much looking at what you plant. But he was a gardener for a very short time. But what's interesting is I remember reading about him, having seen him quoted left, right and centre, And then there was a little piece about him, and he was a gardener for about 2 or 3 years and failed, and so he did something else. Related, but he wasn't actually gardening, but he had the knowledge. But this is, 400 or 500 years ago, whenever it was he was writing. I think his name was Trusset or Trully or Tully or something like that. And, yes, many books have I seen in the rhyming couplets. Probably my friend Sean has come across him. Anyway, I don't have comments on The Naked Englishman, so nobody can actually write it in for all to see. They'll have to just email me or whatever, message me. Anyway, so we were sort of, you know, it was just nice to sort of go through that, what we would do, how much space we would need, what size of veg patch would you go, and then because we'd been watching a few off-grid people who were growing stuff. I mean, there was one chap who said all his potatoes were being dug up, and so we were saying, well, what, you know, apparently rabbits can dig them up, but they don't eat them. And you think, well, that's a bit of a thing. So, but when we've been round people's allotments and things, and they haven't covered everything up, and I suppose, of course, the old adage in the days of the Victorian kitchen garden, where they didn't have any problems with pests eating the stuff, because there was enough personnel constantly on site, walking about, that scared the predators, apart from, I suppose, a few slugs and things, off. So that was interesting. So what sort of protection? We saw a video where they were putting this net called Tulle, but it's not T-O-O-L, I think it's T-U-L-L-E or something, over everything, like a net curtain over everything, but enough light can get through, but the animals, because it's so fine, the animals can't access it, so... That was interesting. So anyway, we did all that, and then as we were strolling along, this frog hopped out in front of us.
Boink! Nearly stepped on it, didn't you?
Yeah, nearly squished the thing. But we picked it up and managed to sort of, quite a big frog. I suppose it was not the palm of my hand, but if you took the fingers off, that would be painful. But if you...
That is the palm of your hand.
Oh, yeah, just the palm, not the whole hand. That's it, yeah. So he would sit quite...
Mm.
Yeah.
It was almost as big as your palm.
Almost as big. So it's a big old frog, not like sometimes you see these tiddly little things. Mm. So we cleared the grass that was on the path and picked him up gently and let him go somewhere else. But it was nice to see, but again... Typical us is that we didn't think to take a picture of it.
Yeah.
Not that I can show you a picture on The Naked Englishman anyway, but it was nice to see wildlife still out and about.
We did manage to find a nice boggy, like, bit of mud to put him near.
Yes, so there was a sort of a...
He could moisturise himself a bit.
So, yeah, he could get a bit wet, because it was humid, as I said, so, you know, sometimes these frogs and things... These amphibians?
Amphibians, yeah.
You know, you find them and they seem to be well away from water and you think, what are you doing? Venturing away. Have you got yourself lost? But I guess that frogs and things, they go looking for places and sometimes they come back to the same place where they were spawned, weren't they?
I think that's what I've believed all my life, that they come back to the place where they were spawned so that they can spawn.
Yeah.
And that would mean that there were thousands of frogs coming to the same pond every year, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But who knows, I mean, how many of them actually survive to adulthood to breed?
Well, exactly. I mean, there are times of the year at certain places where frogs are crossing the road, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're all coming, trying to get back, and the cars are just, well, squishing them. It's rather sad.
Speaking of squished frog,
I
had a lovely frog that, you know, I've known for... quite a few years living at the house I've been living at, and when we went away to Craneage it got deaded. I got back from Craneage and went and opened the back door to the conservatory, and realised there was a squished frog in the corner of the door frame.
Oh, nasty.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't happy about that.
No. We also found, I mean, yesterday was like Nature Day.
Yeah.
We were in nature, and then nature suddenly, we heard this squeaking sound as we were walking through this sort of longish grass area, and we couldn't work out what it was. You thought it was a car alarm, didn't you?
But there was a split second, and my brain went, car alarm? And then the rest of my brain went, no, don't be stupid.
Yeah, because there was no immediate cars near us, although, of course, there was a road, so who knows? And anyway, we realised it was coming from the ground, and of course curiosity got the better of us.
And we thought, oh God, what have we stepped on now?
What have we done? Perhaps there's a wounded animal or something. Anyway, it took a bit of an effort to find, but because the squeaking was quite persistent and extremely high-pitched, you know, you couldn't miss it.
Couldn't mimic it either.
And you couldn't mimic it, yeah. And it turns out that it was a little nest, a little field mouse nest. Now, I've never seen in real life a field mouse nest.
No, me neither.
And it was a strange place to have it, because it was obviously near a path, but I guess this path doesn't get walked on very often.
Could have been a first-time parent that put the nest there.
But the parents weren't there.
No.
So there was this, you know, you had ordinary grass, or longish grass, and then you had this very soft grass, wasn't it? That's why we kind of knew it was a nest. And then you lifted up, Julia did all the hard work, the lifting and stuff, this very, very fine, softish sort of dried grass, lifted it up, and underneath, describe what we saw.
Well, at first I only saw three, but I did a double check. There was five little naked pink bodies in there with eyes shut still.
So they were very young.
Yeah.
But amazing, they must have detected, either thought, mum and dad's back, here we are, give us some food.
Yeah.
Or it was like an alarm call.
Yeah, yeah. For example, if a horse or cow were to walk near a nest like that, I think the babies would alarm call with the vibrations.
Yeah.
To say, don't step on me, sort of thing, instinctual.
And I assume that mice would not do ground nesting like that in a field of cows.
Well, true. I'd have thought they'd have been nearer, like hedgerows and stuff, but I don't know.
But this wasn't this.
But in
there
the
wasn't,
wild world, in the wild world, horses, cows, and all of that roamed anywhere they wanted to.
Yeah, so it'd be easy for these. And so you just thought, well, if a tractor or a horse or whatever it was in the field, these poor little blighters could easily just get squashed.
Well, horses of good hearing, they would hear the squeak, and they would either not step on it, or they would indicate that there was something there.
So that might be something that is just a natural thing.
And actually, horses, and I'm not sure about cows, but probably, but definitely elephants, it's well known, are afraid of mice.
Yeah. So I guess, whereas a tractor wouldn't hear them.
No.
Nor would the human.
Completely different universe, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and it would just squish them, and it would, that would have been awful.
Obliterate.
So, we carefully put the
Well, we found some stones to put around it and kind of alert other people.
Yeah, not to tread on it.
There was something there.
Yeah, so people hopefully wouldn't, you know, you just hope some other kids wouldn't walk along there and kick the stones.
Mm.
But what can you do? What do you do when you see that? You can't take them home
and
you can't feed them. I mean, they were like 1 or 2 days old because the eyes weren't open.
I will say that had I had the mind to it and had I not realised that they were wild animals, I could have taken all five of those and I would have had them all kept to maturity. I know it because I've done it, not with tiny, tiny baby mice, but with other animals. So.
Yeah.
But that's the heartbreaker. I can't. You can't. You just can't do that.
No.
All the time. And anyway, we don't know if when we walked away, the parents came back.
Well, exactly. One hopes that.
I mean, we did very, very, you know, carefully not touch the babies.
No, we didn't touch them, so they didn't have any of our smell on them or anything.
My hands were freshly washed from a nearby stream anyway, so I just rubbed them in the grass.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, it was just, you know, on one hand, it was quite joyous to see nature like that. But on the other hand, when you disturb it and you realise, oh, where's the parents? You start worrying.
Yeah.
And of course, snakes could have had them Kites or what have you, buzzards up there would have could have easily, and of course
even a rabbit could have.
And a rabbit may have eaten them. Fox maybe, a little sort of morsel. And you realise this is going on all over the country, of course, and they do get eaten and they do get that. And there's us standing over these things, worrying our little heads off about something that has no notion that's even alive, other than a natural. Auto response to the sound of approaching feet, I suppose. So anyway, that was our highlight yesterday. That was really quite quite nice.
Did you dream about them?
I didn't know. Did you?
I think I did. I don't often remember my dreams, but
But you know, it does make you want to sort of go back and see that they were okay. That's the thing. It's and of course, when we get our own bit of land.
What are we going to be like?
Gosh. Yeah, we'll probably find all sorts of things.
Good job we're going to do it by hand, isn't it?
Yes.
We can't afford a horse.
I mean, things like wasps, I'm quite happy not to be worried about. And snakes, I'm not very keen. Now, you've kept snakes, haven't you?
I had a corner snake. Amelanistic, meaning he had no black pigment, he was orange and yellow.
Ah.
And beautiful shades of red.
So, yeah, but you know, you could be digging somewhere and you might just slice into something.
It breaks my heart enough if I slice a blinking worm enough.
Yeah, well, exactly, you know. So yeah, so that's it brought home the fact that of course in a field that you purchase, wherever it is,
life and death are closely bound.
Yeah. even if the field has been ploughed to death, not that we're aiming to buy one of those, because the work to regenerate the soil would be too much.
Yeah, we'd rather have it overgrown than blanched to a millimetre of existence. Sorry about the stumbling there.
Because you don't know what's been put on it. You know, if it's... But at the end of the day, the important thing is to get something and then start to do your own thing on it. Wildlife, I think that's going to be a boon and a bane.
Uh-huh.
The wildlife, because on the one hand, you know, it'd be lovely to have little mice people on the land, but at the same time, of course, when you've got grain or food stored, the last thing you want is those sodding mice coming in and nibbling away all your seeds or something. So it's a sort of the love of the nature is one hand, but just stay over there and leave my bag of seeds. Or if you've, you know, that was the other thing, I interviewed a woman years ago, and I made this video called The Harvest. She was a German, and we interviewed her one time. I think it was with Jimmy.
It was a royal we, if not.
Yes, no, it was like 7 years ago, or 7 or 8 years ago, when I was, or maybe longer, maybe
it's
10 years ago.
7 years now.
Oh, yeah, so it was probably 10 or 12 years ago. I interviewed her when I was doing the Vogue show, and her husband. And they had one of those orange tractors.
Ooh, Harvest Gold tractor.
Yeah, it was lovely. Anyway, he died, which was very sad. And she had this nursery. They had this nursery. They'd given up everything, bought this nursery in Barnum. And we interviewed them, and it was great. Then he died, but we went back a year later, or sometime when I was making The Harvest, on video, and I interviewed her, and she was had another chap, that not a boyfriend, but a chap who was helping her, and we filmed this bit where she'd planted some seeds in the greenhouse, and they were looking at the seeds, and they were going, they were devastated because mice had come in and basically decimated, or perhaps more than 10%, had just eaten, you know, all the seeds.
It was
in a polytunnel of some description. It was a large polytunnel or a greenhouse. Yeah, I think it was a large greenhouse, one of these sort of industrial-sized greenhouses on their nursery. And, they were absolutely devastated. And it made great video, and I don't know whether she ever gave up in the end, because she said it was very hard. And it was the same video that she had another greenhouse they had, because it's a nursery with lots of greenhouses. She said she had, I can't remember what they were, beans or no, tomatoes I think they were. So they were doing quite sort of large scale, but not big farm. It was a small nursery, but I had, Anyway, and they were saying they're not being pollinated. So these tomato plants were not being pollinated. And she was really worried. So she hired in a beehive. And I remember asking her, I said, well, when you hire it in, do you get it all back? And I think she said, no, what happens is the bees die off eventually, or you can't collect all the bees. Right, okay, come back, boys. And so a swarm. You buy a swarm or something, and the swarm goes in and pollinates the plants, and then they fly off and do whatever they think. You kind of lose it then. As I remember it. But anyway, fascinating whole business. Why did I mention that? Oh, about the mice. Mm. So yes, mice are a problem, and we're going to have all of this issue. But
we've got cats.
Yes, and so that was the other thing. So we discussed, and we have discussed for weeks and weeks now, haven't we, about either feral cats or a dog, and you know, to stop.
When you say feral, farm cat.
Yeah, farm cat type cat. And then a dog for if we had chickens, to deter the foxes and other predators. So,
and also to do perimeter walks and do his peepees around there, keep other
animals. Yeah, that's
a warning then.
So there's lots. It's just so much to think about. You know, when you live in a house, all you've got to think about is getting up and going to work and coming home and watching the telly. And then you realise that's a bit dull and boring. It's not very challenging. Okay. Whereas having the land, I mean, the first part is getting the land, finding the land, then buying the land and affording the land. And then once you've got over that hurdle, presumably, it's full of challenges, and you've got to be able to face it with the grim reality that it is. And with a bit of a good luck and a north wind.
And a smile.
And a smile.
And gratitude in your heart.
Exactly. So there we are. So we're on the brink of that adventure, hopefully, if all things pan out. Anyway, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that, and catch up with you soon. Till then, bye-bye.
Daddy bye.